episode is sponsored by Books and Whatnot, an email newsletter for booksellers. If you're a bookseller and you haven't subscribed, it's a good thing you're listening to this ad. Go to booksandwhatnot.com to sign up. My favorite feature is 300 seconds, an idea or suggestion which can be implemented in 300 seconds or less. We don't have a lot of time as booksellers, so any little bit helps. Go to booksandwhatnot.com, that's booksandwhatnot.com to sign up for this awesome newsletter.
Read so hard, library's trying to find me. They can't identify me. Checked in with a pseudonym, so I guess you could say I'm Mark Twaining. Read so hard,
that shit cray.
That shit cray.
Ain't it, eh?
Read so hard,
what you reading?
What you reading?
Demon Tang. Read so hard,
you use a Kindle?
I carry spines, supporting bookshelves like a bra. Calvin Klein.
Hi, you're listening to Drunk Booksellers. My name is Kim.
And I'm Emma.
And we're professional booksellers.
And casual drinkers.
Today we have Paul Constant on the show. He is the co-founder and also a writer and contributor to the Seattle Review of Books. Before co-founding the Seattle Review of Books, Paul worked at Elliott Bay, which Emma and I know and love quite well, for 8 years, and was at the Brattle Books in Boston prior to that, and Borders before that.
That's right.
Cool. So... lots of former booksellery-ness.
Yeah.
And he also was the books editor for The Stranger.
That's right.
Oh, that is a thing, too.
That is a thing, too.
Paul, thank you so much for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So we always start off with what we're drinking, but this is our 420 episode, and also you requested to not drink, which we totally approve of. So Emma and Paul are high right now. I, however, do not talk when I'm high, so I'm drinking the hoppiest IPA I can find because I figure that's kind of the same thing.
Sure.
I'm actually just smoking right now.
Okay. Well, you should do that. Yeah.
Yeah, I used to drink. I don't drink anymore. I'm not like in 12-step or anything like that. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but I just realized I didn't like how I felt when I drank, and I especially, as I was getting older, really didn't like hangovers, and the hangovers were coming after like 2 beers, so...
Yeah.
And I've been starting to notice that. It's a little rough.
I turned 40 this year, and it's real. And then when then pot became legal in Washington, and I have really learned to enjoy it. So I am not smoking, because I used to smoke, and I quit, and I don't like smoking pot. So I had a Mr. Moxie's Mints, and I had the peppermint flavor, which is a Sativa THC, and as I learned from my good friend David Schmader, who wrote a book called Weed the User's Guide, sativa is better if you want to talk and be more mentally active, as opposed to the other kind, which I can't remember right now because I'm high, which knocks you out. And so yeah, I'm doing the sativa thing, so hopefully it'll last for the whole show.
Emma, what are you smoking tonight?
I'm not sure. It's something that has less THC and more of a different thing. We actually bought it because it's supposed to make you less, like, kind of in your head high.
Is this the one that you wanted to test on me?
Yeah, we were going to see if it would make you less anxious.
Yeah.
Is it the CBD, the medical?
Maybe. That sounds right. There's definitely a D in it.
Yeah, CBD. not to be confused with a kid's book, CDB. I do that one sometimes, too. That's medical marijuana. It doesn't really have a head high. Again, I learned this from reading Schmader's book, which I highly recommend. But yeah, it's good for anxiety, and there's usually a little bit of THC in it just so you know that it's working. But
right.
Yeah, I recommend it if you're anxious, as I am sometimes.
Yeah. Sure, me too.
That sounds great. Okay, enough of the pot talk, I suppose. So what are you reading right now?
Well, I am reading a few things. I'm kind of in the middle of a bunch of things. One thing that I'm reading that I'm going to be reviewing very soon is Bellingham poet Robert Lashley's second book of poems. It's called Up South. And Robert Lashley reads a lot around town, and he is an incredible reader. He started in the spoken word scene, And if you ever have an opportunity to go see him, I highly recommend it. He's so charismatic when he reads. It's just incredible to watch him. And this book, Up South, he's doing more of a sort of a traditionalist vibe. There's a lot of stuff about Icarus and myths and things like that that he's incorporating into his work. So it's sort of a hybrid between his... hybrid. It's the 420 episode. It's sort of a hybrid between between the spoken word and the literary nature, and it's I'm really digging it so far. I'm also nice. Reading Faith Erin Hicks's The Nameless City in the Stone Heart, you know, young adult series, and I'm really digging that. I'm also reading a collection of books by Mount Analog Press, which is a Seattle area publisher. They're doing some really interesting things. They are publishing political pamphlets. They also published a book of poetry by Ted Powers called Manners. And they have this book called Final Rose by Haley Theoharides, which is a collection of screenshots from The Bachelor with the closed captioning on. And they're arranged in the book, so it's sort of like a comic book tone poem about love and loss that I really dig. And finally, I am getting ready for my post-Trump book club, which is called Reading Through It, and we meet mm-hmm. the first Wednesday of every month at Third Place Books, Seward Park. And so I'm reading the Melville House anthology, What We Do Now, the anthology of essays about life in post-Trump America.
Cool.
Cool. Emma, what are you up to?
I forgot to get the books that I'm reading so that I could just read off the titles. So I had to jump into our last episode's show notes to remember what I'm reading, because I'm reading First Position by Melissa Braden, which, if you listen to our last episode with the Ripped Bodice, is a lesbian ballerina romance.
Ooh. Wait, how is this?
It's is great. It good? Yeah.
I just went to the ballet last night with my girlfriend, so I feel like I should probably read that right now.
Yeah, it was really good. The awesome. Two main characters, one is like a loose cannon, kind of all about the passion and the fire of dancing, and was just like introduced to the New York City Ballet and like has no experience doing ballet before. Sorry, she has experience doing ballet, but she quit when she was in school and like went off to do her own dance. And she is basically in a rivalry with the straight-laced, like, super serious ballerina who has been, like, trying to get a lead role for years and years, and then they both end up getting the role, and then obviously they're gonna fall in love.
Well, Natch, yeah.
It's great.
I'm so excited for this.
And that's kind of the only book that I'm reading, like, with any sort of focus right now.
That happens.
So... I just finished the fourth trade of Giant Days, though. Can we talk about how awesome Giant Days is?
Oh, man,
Days
I
is?
Love that book so much.
It's so funny. Good.
Yeah, yeah, it like, just keeps getting better and better.
I don't even know how to pitch it to people, because I'm like, well, it's just about three women who meet at university, and it's hilarious.
Yeah.
Like, nothing real. I mean, it's not that nothing happens, but, like, you know, they just get into hijinks.
Yeah, it's such a great sort of depiction of friendship, I think, that it's just, and it's, you know, it's like a sitcom, only without all the sort of artificial, you know, forced comedy. It just, mm-hmm. it's such a great, yeah. you know, character study.
Ugh, they're so
it's
good.
It's one of the few books that I've actually, like, laughed out loud while reading it, and because mm-hmm. I don't do that very often, but, like, I have laughed out loud, and also just, like, felt for everything, like, one of the characters. I'm, like, two trades behind right now, though, so...
about you, Kim? What are you reading?
Yeah, so I just finished a slew of short books, all on audio. You actually got mad at me at work because we were listening to We Should All Be Feminists, and you're like, this is like
15-minute
read. Yeah, but it's a 45-minute, like, it's shorter than this podcast will be. And Chimamanda Ngozi Adichie, like, actually reads it, and her voice is just incredible.
Yeah,
it really is.
Yeah, so just... finish that finally, which I'd been meaning to get to forever. Also just read Hope in the Dark, which I'd also been meaning to get to forever, by Rebecca Solnit. I was absolutely shocked by how close to home it feels, considering a lot of what she's talking about is like Bush era issues. It was vaguely terrifying and kind of hopeful, but like not actually, because we're still here. So,
yeah.
Sorry, Solomit. And then also just read Timothy Snyder's On Tyranny, which is one of the most practical like views of how to deal with the current administration that I've seen come out so far. But it's formatted with different like bullet points of things to do right now to like combat tyranny, and it's practical but also like looks back in history in a way that is extraordinarily meaningful. So I really loved it. On a totally different note, the book I'm currently reading is called The Isles Have Eyes, which is a book by Joseph Turow about, the subtitle is How Retailers Track Your Shopping, Strip Your Privacy, and Define Your Power. A lot of it is about like how retailers, obviously mostly like big box retailers and like Amazon, are tracking us online and like the ads that they use and the way that they use technology in order to like track customers, like behaviors, and interesting view of the past and future of retail as certain folks see that.
Yeah.
Certain folks who are not booksellers in the normal sense of the word. So,
all right. How about some friend list?
Yeah. Yeah. So, Paul, what are you excited about this coming out in the nearest future?
The thing I'm most excited for is Sherman Alexie's memoir, You Don't Have to Say You Love Me, which is about this terrible year that he lived through not so very long ago when he his mother passed away, and he had a very complicated relationship with her. And he also had brain surgery for a tumor that was benign but still very large and still in his head. So this is sort of a memoir about his relationship with his mother and surgery and mortality. And he even got some Trump stuff in there at the very end. And he's just
Sherman.
Yeah, he's an incredible writer. And I'm just getting the sense that this book is going to be a big one for him. I think that you know, everything he writes is very deeply felt, but I think that this one is going to be something really special. I've heard really good things, and I'm looking forward to Claire Dederer's memoir, Love and Trouble, A Midlife Reckoning. She's a Seattle writer. She wrote Poser, My Life in 23 Yoga Poses, which, to be honest, I wasn't really crazy about, but I've heard really good things about this one, and I'm excited to read it because I think that she's a really good writer, and I'm excited. I've been doing I'm doing a lot of memoirs, which is funny because I'm not usually crazy about memoirs, but I'm super excited for David Sedaris's Diaries, Theft by Finding. Uh-huh. I wrote the dust jacket for that one, which is weird. so that was super fun, and you know, I'm also excited along the memoir line for Roxane Gay's Hunger, A Memoir of My Body. And Patricia Lockwood's Priest Daddy.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that was a laundry list. So, yeah, what are you interested in coming up?
Kim, you want to go first?
Yeah, sure. Jeff Vandermeer, who is probably best known now for his Area X trilogy, which started with Annihilation. We put in the speculative fiction section at Word. I feel like it's not quite sci-fi. It's just mostly weird. But he's got a standalone book coming out that sounds way weirder than the Area X trilogy. It's just fantastic and such a trip. So, yeah, so Born is the name of the book, Born with an E. It's coming out at the end of April. Obviously, Lydia Yuknovich mentioned last time, but she's got Book of Joan coming out April 18th, which I'll just keep mentioning every, you know, episode for the next 5 episodes.
Joan of Arc in Space.
Joan of Arc in Space, written by Lydia. I had, like, 2 customers come in this last week asking about Lydia. Well, I had one person come in asking for another book, and then she was like, oh, and I'm also looking for this book, Chronology of Water. I'm like, oh, yeah, I got you. And then I, like, talked her ear off for 20 minutes about Lydia. And another person who I just recommended, like, last time she'd been in the store, I'd recommended Small Backs of Children. And so we just, like, gushed over Lydia for a long time. So it was wonderful. But in the beginning of May, we're also going to have a new Eden Lepucky, who wrote California. We've got a woman, number 17, which I know zero about, but I'm excited about because I love Lopucky. And Amelia Gray. Emma, were you going to talk about Amelia Gray?
I have the galley, but I have no idea what it's about, but I'm really excited about it.
Yeah, Amelia Gray's got a new book coming out called Isadora, which comes out May 23rd, which is also going to be awesome. And I think that's it for May.
That's good, because I've got some June books to mention.
Ooh.
Well, you, bro.
Before I jump into June, on the 25th of April, Rob Sheffield is coming out with a book. I will read anything he writes because I love Love is a Mixtape. And this one is about the Beatles, which I am very interested in. It's called Dreaming the Beatles. I'm sure it'll be great. If it has a paper board cover like his Bowie book did, even better. So that's how I feel about that. And then June 13th, two books are coming out that I'm excited about. One is called Witches, Sluts, Feminists. The subtitle is Conjuring the Sex Positive. I have no idea really what it's about, except what it sounds like it's about, which is feminism and sex and witches. And that all sounds good to me.
100% on board.
It's by Kristen J. Soli. And then Michelle T. is coming out with a book.
Wait, what?
Yeah, I thought you might not know about that, because you hadn't mentioned it to me yet.
God damn it.
it's called Modern Tarot. Michelle T. wrote a tarot book.
Holy shit!
I know.
How did this not be on my radar?
Like a how-to tarot book, or like a...
Yeah, it's supposed to be kind of a tarot guide for, like, the modern day. It's not... most tarot guides, I feel like, use the Rider-Waite deck. This isn't tied to any specific deck.
Huh.
Which is cool, because I've been kind of wanting to learn how to read tarot cards. And now Michelle T. can teach me.
This is amazing. You should learn everything.
Wow, is she gonna throw down with Jessa Crispin? She wrote a...
I know, right?
She wrote a tarot book last year. Yeah, I know. That would be something.
I would watch that. I want to go to, like, an event that's the two of them reading people's cards. I hope somebody thinks amazing. Of that. If I was an events person, I would make that happen. Events people, please make that happen in Seattle, if possible.
Okay. Oh, this is amazing. Okay, yep. Cool.
So that's coming out June 13th.
I'm excited.
And then there is a book coming out June 20th called The Perfect Mix by Helen Rothberg. And the subtitle is Everything I Know About Leadership I Learned as a Bartender. So it's a business book by a bartender, which is awesome.
So cool.
Yeah.
I love it. Wonderful.
Yep. So those are all my books, and I'm very excited.
That sounds great. I'm excited for you, too. I'm excited for all of us.
Read so hard, libraries trying to find me. That shit crack. That shit crack.
Oh, hi.
That was a good beer noise.
Yeah. Oh, thank you. I hope you got that on recording.
Oh, I did. Don't worry. Okay. Cool. So let's move on to the next section, which is talking about what you do, Paul. So you're the editor for Seattle Review of Books, as well as the co-founder. Tell us what the fuck that is.
it's kind of a long story that is sort of tied to my history as a bookseller. What Seattle Review of Books is I'm the co-founder along with my business partner Martin McClellan, and we are a book news review and interview site. We cover Seattle news. Of course, we have a focus on Seattle writers, but we're also interested in books from all over the world. We like to say our reviews come from a Seattle perspective. The book review is an art form that I think is really underappreciated. Book critics are the only critics who respond to the work of art in the form of the art, right? Like, nobody makes a movie to critique a movie, and nobody paints a critique of a painting. I mean, you'll get conversation between artists and things like that, but critics don't generally work in the same medium. And so I feel like that's sort of a huge that's a huge trust. You know, if you are going to talk about somebody's awful writing style, you better be a good writer, right? Like, I think that most review outlets have sort of forgotten that, and mostly we just get like a plot synopsis with an up or down, you know, thumbs up or thumbs down judgment on whether you should buy it. And I'm not interested in consumer reports. You know, we're interested in having a conversation with the book and contextualizing the book within the author's career and within, you know, current events and things like that. So we just want to bring beautiful writing about books into the world. And so that's, we've been doing that for 2 years now. And the response has been really good. You know, we have a sponsorship program on the site where authors or people having events can pay. We only have one sort of ad spot on the site, and it's everywhere on the site. If you click to a review, it's there. If you read the news, it's there. That's how we pay our contributors. So the site's turned a profit 2 years in a row, which is great. You know, we pay our freelancers, which is wonderful. You know, we run a poem every week by a local poet, and we pay the poets, which is something, you know, it's just fun to do. So we just want a site that resembles Seattle, that reports on Seattle, and we want a site that sort of looks like your bookshelf, right? Like, you, most people don't have their bookshelves arranged like in bookstores. They have, you know, the comic books are next to the poetry books or next to the used books and the new books and all that. And so it was really...
I don't understand.
What's that?
I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. So we wanted to have something that more closely resembled what people read now, which means not all front list, you know, which is more about a reading life. That's what we're trying to do, and so far it's been working.
That's
so
awesome.
All of your revenue comes from a single sponsor each time?
Yeah, one sponsorship per week. And both Martin and I have day jobs. I want to make that clear. Like, we don't draw a salary from the site, so the profit is, you have to keep that in mind. But
that's awesome. That's really kind of surprising, but it makes me so happy that is a thing that can, like, succeed.
Yeah.
Today.
Yeah, there's, you know, I think the trick is, you know, we are not trying to get, we're not a click-based model, right? We don't need to get as many people to click through as possible, which means we don't do the clickbait, we don't do, you know, I've been in those click mines, and they're horrible places, and so I think the trick is just to cover one thing and do it well and do it passionately. And, you know, if you keep your goals to scale, then I think that it's very possible to be successful.
And you guys have a lot of recurring columns. My favorite one is the advice column.
Yeah,
as
the
a
help
bookseller.
Desk.
I really like that.
Yeah, the help desk is written by Sienna Madrid, and she is one of my favorite writers. We used to write together at The Stranger, and I love that column so much. Any of your readers have any book etiquette questions? Sienna is always up for answering those, and you can send those to advice@seattlereviewofbooks.com. And she has answered a great deal of questions, ranging from, you know, questions about reading erotica on public transit to what else has she done? Oh man, so many books. Like, what to do when your boyfriend likes Ayn Rand, or
this is
it can be anything. If you're a bookseller with etiquette questions about customers, or if you're a reader with questions about going to a reading and the author has really bad breath or whatever. Just any book-related question. I just think people who listen to this podcast would have great questions for Sienna. So that's advice@seattlereviewofbooks.com.
One of the questions you actually explicitly mentioned on the About page is, how can you claim to celebrate the diversity of Seattle's literary scene? Aren't you a couple of white dudes?
Yeah, that actually.
You want to talk about diversity and what you guys are doing, and also respond to the white dude's concern?
Yeah, that actually came out of. So I had left The Stranger, and Martin is the only human being I've ever met on Twitter. Like, we started following each other on Twitter the way people do, and then like he came up and said hi at an event, and then we kept running into each other. So I think he's the only friend I've actually made off of Twitter who's not an IRL Twitter friend. And so I left The Stranger, and I got a day job, but I was really missing writing about books, and not just books, but the city, you know. And so I was out with Martin, and we were talking about that, and Martin said, you should start the Seattle Review of Books. And I said, well, that name has to be taken, for one. And then he looked it up on his phone, and it wasn't taken, and so he bought it at the table. And he was like, look.
That's how all the best ideas start.
Yeah, it is, yeah. And so he was like, you know, I bought it, and, you know, we can, if you want to do something, I'd love to be a part of it, and so on. And so we were sitting there and talking about it and getting kind of excited about it. And there was literally a point where I was just like, hold on a minute. We're a couple of straight white dudes. And like Martin shook his head and said, I know. And so, so it was like,
it must be hard for you guys.
It was the immediate response to, we should do this because, you know, I mean, God knows there's enough of a platform out there, especially in publishing for white men. And so we tried to be really thoughtful about the way that we addressed it in the site. And so, so Martin and I sort of baked in ways to keep track of this. We have, for contributors to the site, we have a survey. It's entirely optional. I don't think anyone has refused so far. It's a demographic survey. When somebody writes for the site, they fill out a form and it says, you know, would you be willing to share your race and your gender preference? Are there any other groups that you're a part of that you think we should know about? So we have a pretty good demographic understanding of who we're hiring mm-hmm. to write for us. And then we also hired a diversity editor who once or twice a year does a demographic survey of the who we're covering and who we're hiring to write about things that we're covering. And so she did her first report soon after we hit our 1 year anniversary, and we were pretty good. It was a little whiter than I would like, but you know, I feel pretty strong about it. I mean, there are always going to be places for improvement, right? And I just think it's important to have that sort of intentionality baked in, especially when you are a couple of white dudes, you know.
Do you seek out folks from diverse backgrounds?
Yeah, as much as I seek people out, I wish I did more in general, because as soon as we started the site, like, we were, you know, deluged with pitches, and almost all of them were from white guys, right?
Yeah.
Like, I think the second pitch we got was from a guy who, like, his email said bro, and he wanted to write about the new Franzen. And I was like, oh my God, this is like, it's like everything I don't want to do. So yeah, there needs to be seeking out. And I have, you know, sent emails out to people and recruited people. So yes, it is.
I mean, this is the thing that we've been talking about a lot in bookselling recently. Not recently, forever.
Sure.
But has been coming to light a lot in the past year or so. Some of our colleagues at other stores have been really focused on making sure that we're hiring for diversity, and that we're reaching out to communities that wouldn't normally think the bookstore is a safe space to a certain extent for them. And we want to make sure that, like, we're doing that. But it's also, like, you know, you need somebody to break the seal, if you will. And it becomes difficult in that way.
Yeah, because it is a top-down problem, you know? Like, it's funny, the publishing industry seems almost entirely made up of women. Based on my inbox, right? Mm-hmm. Like, all the PR emails I get are from women. And most of the editors I talk to are women. And most of the agents I talk to are women. But the people who own the publishing companies and are in the positions of power are men, white men.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it's tough. And so I think that, you know, there's nothing that I can do or that you can do about the people at the very top, at least now, you know, except do what we can in our spaces to seek out and encourage diversity. So, yeah, it's super important with book selling, you know, to make, because it is, it's a comfort issue and also a viewpoint issue and all sorts of things. And maybe if enough of us do that, then we can, you know, get some more people at the top to demonstrate that sort of, you know, institutionalize that diversity.
Not to put you on the spot with this giant question that everybody's been trying to figure out for a while, but like, do you have ideas of how bookstores can approach the conversation in a more meaningful manner and like and advocate for diversity, not just in like the way that we are displaying titles, but in the way that we are hiring and booking events and advocating for the non-straight cis white guy?
Sure. I think it's on the bookselling level, it's almost every level, right? Like the what you put on display does matter. The books that you choose to have on your shelves matter. And, you know, this is the wall that I find that most white dudes have a problem with, is just realizing that it's not enough to say my door is open. You know, you got to go out and say, what can I do? So like, I would, you know, suggest for any bookstore to reach out to minority organizations and schools and say, hey, what can we do for you? Right? Like, how can we make our bookstore more welcoming for you? Are there any events that you want to do with us? You know, who are your favorite writers who we can bring to town? It's a super complicated issue and it's not easy, but it's so rewarding when it's done right. But then there's also the issue of, you know, like, you don't want to just find, you know, one person and make them your viewpoint into a community, because that puts a lot of undue pressure on somebody and it's not a fair way to represent. So you just have to, you have to keep doing it, and it's a lot of work, and you have to reach out and get as many people as possible. So and you just have to look at your, you know, your store and your staff from you know, someone else's perspective and say, is this place welcoming? It's an ongoing process, but I think that it gets easier as you go. We're not getting as many bro-ish white guys trying to write about the canon in our submission inbox, which I take as a, you know, a sign of success. And I think that comes
you got the right audience. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that comes from showing and not telling, I think is really important. At the beginning, when we wrote that about page, all we could do was tell and then try to live up to the telling. But I think now we've gotten to the point where you can see a little bit what we're trying to do, which is not to say that we've done it and we need to stop, but is at least that it's a little easier now, I think.
Yeah. Read so hard, libraries trying to find me. That shit crack.
That shit crack. That shit crack. We talked about Reading Through It, which is the book group that you're doing right now with Third Place Books and Seward Park that is discussing the cause and effects of the post-Trump America. Can you talk more about what you're doing with that within the context of Seattle Review of Books and how that's been working out for you guys? And
yeah.
What impact do you feel like it's having?
Yeah. So first, I guess I have to backtrack and say that so the Seattle Review of Books has a partnership with Seattle Weekly where they run our readings calendar in the print edition of the Seattle Weekly. And I write one book review every 2 weeks that appears both on Seattle Review of Books and in the print version of the Seattle Weekly. So it's mutually beneficial. But the editor-in-chief of the Weekly, Mark Baumgarten, came to me and said we should do a post-Trump book club. And so it was entirely his idea. So he and Martin and I brought it to Third Place Books, Seward Park, which is, you know, it's a store that I love in a part of town that's historically been underserved for book clubs and for bookstores, and so we wanted to do it somewhere in a neighborhood, and they're looking to build a community, so it helps everybody. So yeah, I think there's a real search for for meaning out of Trump's election. And I think that everything that people talk about, everything that people say we need to do post-Trump, you know, people say we need to have more empathy for each other, and people say we need to, you know, better understand what's going on in communities, and people need to understand what's going on economically in this country and the history of voting in this country and all these things. All these articles you read about, you know, what went wrong and how did this happen? I think there is no problem that anybody has listed about Trump that you cannot learn more, you know. This is what books were made for, right? Like books, yeah. Books are engines of empathy. Books are the only way to do a deep dive into an issue. Books are stored knowledge, you know, opinions and facts and everything. It just seems like this is the moment for books, right? And so we put out some ads in the weekly, and the response has been great. We've been getting about 100 people. It's been really meaningful. You know, I haven't loved all of the books. Like, I thought that C.D. Vance's Hillbilly Elegy was horrible.
Yeah, I've heard not great things.
Here's the
thing.
Can I give a bit of a, like, I feel bad for Hillbilly Elegy. I feel like,
okay.
Go ahead. I think he wrote a memoir that it wasn't supposed to be like, holy shit, Trump just got elected.
Sure.
This is the response.
Sure.
I think he was just writing a fucking memoir, and all of a sudden, everything changed.
Right.
Sure.
Right, so around the time.
If we're trying to read it as an explanation of the rise of populism and the Trump phenomenon, mm-hmm. it fails miserably. And I think that's what a lot of people are trying to read it as. But I feel bad for him. I don't necessarily think it's the best book ever, but like...
The books.
There's a lot of pressure that's been put on it.
Absolutely, absolutely. But you know, that guy is also going to run for office in Ohio. Like he's openly flirting with that. Like I think that his goal was always to write like a honky Dreams from My Father, and like this was going to be his launch pad into the political life. And like he has some political aspirations in that book that I really hated. Like when he was. There was a point where he made a distinction between his kind of poor people and then the lazy kind of poor people who are on the dole. And that raised my hackles. I have to admit, this is totally off topic, but as a critic, I did feel a little self-conscious about coming on the show because you two are so positive and your guests are always so positive. And like, I love books and I love lots of books, but man, sometimes I can't bite my tongue. And so I was like, oh, I'm just going to come on this show and be like a total, you know, storm cloud and just like,
it's kind of refreshing. Like as booksellers, we're not going to really like talk shit about books. So like we still won't. And I'll still do that thing where I'm like, oh, but guys,
it's really popular.
You sell a lot of them, not gonna shit on it, but you don't need to sell it, so like you go for it, dude.
I know I was like, oh man, I'm just gonna like, I'm totally gonna shit in a punch bowl. It's gonna
be
awful.
It's great We love it.
We did Hillbilly Elegy and we did Hope in the Dark, which to mm-hmm. me was really incredible at the time that we read it, and Strangers in Their Own Land, which I thought, if you're trying to decide between that and Hillbilly Elegy, I think Strangers in Their mm-hmm. Own Land was actually intended for this moment. And I think it does the work that Hillbilly Elegy does, only it has, you know, facts and actual data to back it up. And so I would suggest that one if you're trying to decide between the two. It's been really good. You know, like I do think that we could do more for the diversity of the group. We need to do more outreach because it's a pretty white group at the moment. But, you know, people show up ready to talk and ready to listen. And that doesn't always happen with book clubs. And so I'm pretty pleased with how it's gone so far. It's been great. If you have any, you know, curiosity about it, I would suggest showing up, you know, sit in the back. If it's not your thing, you can leave. But, yeah, so our next book club is on May 3rd, And we're doing The Righteous Mind, Why Good People Are Divided by Politics and Religion by Jonathan Haidt. This one was recommended by somebody in the audience, so I haven't read it. I'm excited to read it because I'm always kind of fascinated by religion, and especially when it mixes in with politics.
Yeah.
So I have some former bookselling questions. Do you miss bookselling, and why did you leave?
I was a bookseller almost my entire life. I worked at a Borders for 4 years. I wrote about that, actually. Maybe you can include the link to that in the show notes newsletter.
Oh, we do very good show
notes. Yeah, so I'll include the link to that. I wrote a story about Borders when the chain went out of business. So I was there for 4 years, and then I was at Elliott Bay for 8 years. And I did a little time at the Brattle Bookshop in Boston, where I actually worked with Michelle T.
Cool.
For a week. Yeah, yeah. At the time, she was like, oh, yeah, I just wrote this book. It's called Valencia. It's coming out. And I was like, oh, yeah, that'll do great. and then she was Michelle T. And so, yeah. And then I got a job at Elliott Bay 2 weeks after I moved to Seattle. And so I was a bookseller for 12 years, all told. And the two loves of my life are writing and reading. And so I wanted to pursue the writing part a little bit, but I never wanted to write a novel or anything like that. I like writing about things that are happening right now. And so there was an internship at The Stranger. And, you know, you work irregular hours when you're a bookseller. So I had time during the week. So I just went to work for the book page as an intern, which is basically just assembling the readings calendar at the time. And so I really liked writing about books. I liked not having to be positive about books all the time, which, you know, is like it's a book selling thing. I love books, but I like being honest about books. And I'm also kind of a cynical person. So I like, you know, talking smack about authors. I told Tracy Taylor, the manager at Elliott Bay, that, you know, the only job I could see myself leaving Elliott Bay for would be The Stranger, or for a paid writing gig. And that was what happened. Eventually the books editor job opened up, and so I left. But it was really hard. I loved bookselling. I would, you know, I could see myself going back to bookselling anytime because I love it. It's I think my book criticism is sort of an extension of my career as a bookseller. I don't think of them as sort of two different things. It's the same. I'm being enthusiastic about books, and I'm, you know, I'm on team books, right? And like, even if I'm writing
I want team books t-shirts now.
even if I'm writing something negative about a book, like, nobody can argue that I don't love books, right? Like,
yeah.
I still think of myself as a bookseller. I still really like hanging out with booksellers. You know, I think of booksellers as my people. Sometimes I really miss the act of bookselling, but I don't feel very apart from that world. So yeah. I wouldn't say that I miss it. It's part of my being, I think.
Read so hard, libraries trying to find me. That shit crack. That shit crack. That shit crack.
So we always ask, a three-part question. What is your desert island read? What book would you carry with you after an apocalyptic event? So your Station 11 read. And what book would you bring with, what book would you bring on an epic journey? So your wild read.
Okay.
I'm better at that drunk.
He struggled stone, dude.
I don't even feel that high.
Well, you know, I listen to your podcast, and so I've thought about this for a long time. And I think for me, the question comes down to what do you want to accomplish with each of these things, right? So I think on the desert island, the question is for me, like, what would you read that you never had the time to read before? Mm-hmm. So for me, that is Robert Caro's biographies of Lyndon Johnson, because I've always heard such great things, but man, those things are thick. And, you know, I try to write a new book review every week, and I just, that is, pretty much my only regret about running a book review site is that I don't have time to get into those like mammoth books that take, you know, even a fast reader like me could take like a month to read or something like that. So I have the Caro books and I'm dying to read them, but they're totally like a, you know, one day I will, you know, go down with a mysterious ailment or something, or get trapped on a desert island and read them. So that's, the Caro books are definitely my desert island one. Now, the apocalyptic event, I would be carrying books around after an apocalyptic event because it would be the things I would want to preserve from society. And so I kind of have two. Mm-hmm. I would bring The Scarlet Letter and Great Expectations because The Scarlet Letter to me has everything you'd need to know about living in a society, whereas Great Expectations has everything you need to know about life and how it doesn't always work out the way you want, but you should live it anyway. So
set the bar low and let it go.
Yeah, you know, like take it as it comes, and the reality won't meet your expectations, but you'll certainly have some adventures along the way. And I think, you know, I think The Scarlet Letter is you know, one of the great American novels, just in terms of like what you owe other people and what it takes to be happy and all of that. I really think that Hawthorne had it all figured out. And then the epic journey, for me, traveling is about observing things. And my favorite thing to do is to go on a trip. You know, when I covered the DNC and the RNC for The Stranger, when I was their presidential reporter, I just love going into another place that I'm not familiar with and just being a brain in the jar and like soaking everything in. And so I would want, there was that, and this isn't even a cheat because they collected it, but there is a hardcover collection of Joan Didion books, We Tell Ourselves Stories in Order to Live. That's like, I think three of her early books. I would take that because I think she is the greatest observer on the planet. And I would want to be like her when I was traveling.
All right, I feel like this next one might be kind of hard since you are, as a not bookstore based bookseller, allowed to be mean about books, but what is your bookseller confession?
Well, I mean, this one I've heard on the show a couple of times, so this is not really, I feel like this isn't even a confession anymore, but I've never read,
is this Harry Potter? Yeah.
Also Lord of the Rings.
God damn it, Paul.
I've never read Harry Potter or Lord of the Rings. I've never watched any of the movies.
I've never read Lord of the Rings.
Wait, really?
Yeah. I'm not a fantasy guy. That's like the one thing I can't get into. I read romance, I read westerns, I read everything, but I cannot. Something about fantasy, especially fantasy that doesn't take place on Earth, I just can't. I can't get into it at all.
Have you tried reading Uprooted by Naomi Novik?
I have not.
Wait, don't just immediately recommend something, Emma. I'm trying to parse this out. I don't know, like, fantasy is so much part of, like, a childhood reading experience to a certain extent. Like, did that not translate into adulthood, or?
My older brother left a copy of The Hobbit in, like, the closet in the hallway, but I started it. It was one of the only books that I even The Hobbit, I can't read. It's like, oh my God, these dwarves are killing me. I could see myself reading the Harry Potter books because I like J.K. Rowling and I like, you know, it's set on Earth and doesn't have its own elven language in it. And so, yeah, I'd be down for it.
Yeah.
Not all fantasy is high fantasy.
Yeah. Yeah. So wait, what was the book you recommended?
Uprooted by Naomi Novik.
Okay.
I haven't met a person who didn't enjoy that book.
All right, well, maybe I can break your streak, but
it does take place on Earth. I mean, it's not like a fantasy magical realm. It's supposed to be like a Polish village, and it is just about a young woman who basically learns that she's a witch and has to take down this like sentient evil forest. And it's super exciting. It's one of those books where, like, you keep thinking, like, okay, now I have a chance to take a breath, and then something terrible happens. There's a lot of murder in it. in a good way. A really great friendship story, a little bit of romance. I feel like it just ticks off a lot of different boxes for a lot of different people. And like, there's magic, but it's not high fantasy by any means.
Okay. Is it a series?
Nope.
Okay. That's see. Oh my God. See.
Yeah. Not a series.
Yeah. I'm not a fan of series anymore. I go to the science fiction sections of bookstores now and like just everything is the first book in a series and it just drives me crazy. Like I want a beginning, a middle, and an end. Okay. Well, I'll read it. I'll absolutely read it, especially if it's not like the first book in the fucking, you know, Helva Dorn, I don't know, Dark Elf trilogy or whatever. Okay.
Let me know what you think.
All right, we'll do.
What is your go-to hand cell?
When I was at Elliott Bay, I'm still really proud of this. My go-to hand cell at Elliott Bay, and I still recommend it quite a lot to people, is FUP by Jim Dodge. It is it's a novella. It's a slim volume, but it's incredible. It's about a grandpa who adopts his grandson, and they find this duck and they name it FUP Duck because it's a play on fucked up. And the duck starts growing to like this enormous size, and it's a fable. It's sort of like an American tall tale. And it's super short. It's like 100 and something pages. The first time I read it, I was sitting in a window. I still remember this feeling. I read the book from beginning to end in one sitting. And then I read it again from beginning to end in one sitting. And then I read it again. I read it three times. And I remember the window and the sunbeam and the way it felt reading that book. I just wanted to read that book forever. And it was just the best reading experience for me.
Three times in one single sitting?
Yeah, three times in one day.
Wow.
Yeah, I've read it. I've read it aloud to people. I've read it so many times since. But that book, I sold so many copies. I sold like 500 and something copies in a year. I was told later that I saved the book from going out of print. Like they brought it into a new edition just because they were selling so many copies at Elliott Bay. That in fact Jim Dodge came to the bookstore to do a reading and like thanked me personally, and I hand sold a copy to Allison Hannigan, Willow from Buffy, and
nice.
Yeah, and it just, that book for me really like cemented the idea of what an independent bookseller can do. Because when I was at Borders, you know, like if I liked FUP, I could have like sold a copy and then maybe their system would have reordered a copy and then I could sell that copy, you know, like it wouldn't have allowed me, like Borders wouldn't have taken a chance on me selling 100 copies of that book, right? But like Elliott Bay totally did, and they ordered more copies, and then when they were having trouble with the publisher, they called the publisher and told the publisher what was happening, and the publisher sent more, and like it was just like this incredible thing that can only happen in an independent bookstore. And then to like meet the author and have him like, you know, say thank you to me for selling his book, like, you know, before I have a chance to say thank you for writing this fucking book. It was incredible. It was just the best experience. And it really, you know, taught me that bookselling, it really makes a difference.
Yeah.
That's such a good story.
That is.
It was one of my life's great reading experiences, I think.
Wow. Yeah. That's a hard recommendation to say no to. I feel like if you tell someone, I read this three times in one day.
Yeah, that was what the shelf talker said.
Don't buy it.
Yeah. And I never had anybody come back and tell me they hated it. You know, like I did have people come back and tell me they loved it. And I would have people come back and ask me for more like that. And there is nothing else quite like it. So,
What about an impossible hand sell?
I have always loved the works of A.L. Kennedy. She is a Scottish novelist who's also a stand-up comedian. She wrote this novel called Paradise that I absolutely loved. It was a novel about an alcoholic, a gorgeous book about addiction. And I found out later, actually, that A.L. Kennedy is a teetotaler. She's never had a drink of alcohol in her life. But she did such an amazing job in this novel of capturing what it means to be addicted, like to need that next drink of alcohol. And she's just one of those writers who has these observations where she'll write something and you'll be like, oh yeah, it's always been that way for me and it always will be that way for me and I never realized it until you wrote it. Like she, there's a scene in the book where she, the main character is cutting up lemons to put in drinks and she talks about how you always have cuts on your hands and you never notice them until you cut lemons, but like, and you don't remember where the cuts come from. And like, there's this, it's an amazing passage and I can't sell her books for the life of me. Like when I was a bookseller, I couldn't sell Paradise. Paradise was one of the first books I reviewed for The Stranger. I can tell, like, I have analytics, like, nobody reads my reviews of her books. Like, it's, I don't know what it is. I don't know what it is, but there's, like, I always feel like I've failed when I try to get people to read A.L. Kennedy, because I think she's just an amazing writer, and I think that I cannot convey that to anybody in a successful way.
Well, I don't know. I'm interested. Yeah. I'm intrigued.
Well, you won't read it, so.
This entire part of the podcast is just going to get cut mysteriously.
Yeah. She never existed.
Yeah.
Twist.
Okay. What about a book that you would like to champion to other booksellers? Like a book that you want other booksellers to be hand-selling?
Well, a book that I would recommend to booksellers... maybe not even to booksellers' customers, but just to booksellers, would be Robert Reich's Saving Capitalism. Because there are a lot of books about politics right now. But Reich actually explains what's wrong with the economy, and he does it in a simple way that even, you know, bookseller, like, I don't understand math. I don't understand the economy. But he's a professor. And he's super good at explaining exactly why the economy is fucked and why that's so important and why a lot of the problems that we're facing are economic problems. And then he explains how to fix it. I think as booksellers, or a lot of the booksellers I know, I don't want to make a generalization, but a lot of booksellers don't think about this kind of stuff. I never thought about this kind of stuff until I became involved as a political writer. But it's important to know, you know, how the economy works. And it's important to know what your role as a consumer and as a, you know, retail employee is in the economy. And it's more important than you'd think. I think that booksellers, you know, you tend to think of bookselling as a calling. But you are actually, you know, you're an economic actor. You are a participant in the economy. You are a citizen, and you have so much power. And I think that if more booksellers understood their power as citizens and what they can do and what has been done to them by people in power over the course of the last 40 years or something like that, it would make booksellers better at recommending political books to their customers, and it would sort of ennoble them, you know, in their role, because it's just so important to be a bookseller right now and to direct people to books. People want to know how to make a difference and what they should be reading and what they need to know. And I think that Robert Reich is one of those rare thinkers who can, you know, his book Aftershock is kind of outdated now, but I read that and it was like he just broke my head open, and all of a sudden I could understand, you know, wait a minute, there is this massive income inequality, and now I finally understand what that means and I know what can be done about it. And that was a huge breakthrough for me, right? Like, no high school or college economics course could really get that home, but he really did it. And he's just a writer who booksellers should read. That was a horrible
lesson. I'm completely sold.
Yeah. Good.
That sounds great.
Good.
That sounds right up my alley.
Cool.
All right. I guess it's time for shout-outs. What is your favorite bookstore?
Well, can I say Elliott Bay Book Company? Or I worked there, so I don't know if I can, right?
We won't be mad.
I mean, I think that Elliott Bay does a really good job of reflecting its booksellers on the shelves. But, you know, I also like a really good neighborhood bookstore, too. So if I can't say Elliott Bay because I worked there, then I would say I would be torn between Ada's Technical Books on Capitol Hill or Third Place Books Ravenna, because they both have cafes. They are both, you know, small but well curated. They're places where you could go and spend time, right? They're big enough that you can walk around, but they're small enough so that you can feel like you can understand their stock.
Yeah. Those are my three favorite bookstores in Seattle.
Really? Cool. Oh, yeah. You have great taste.
You should.
Go team go.
I think those are totally those sorts of bookstores are the future of bookselling, right? Like I think, you know, most American cities could maybe sustain an Elliott Bay sized bookstore, but I know that every American city could sustain several, you know, Adas if they had the people who knew what they were doing and the community that was there to support it. So,
yeah. What about favorite literary media other than your own?
You know, this is the only literary podcast that I listen to.
Nice.
Wow. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm flattered.
I'm blushing. It's fine.
I've tried to listen to a bunch of literary podcasts and either they're too duty for me or they're too mainstream or I listen to a lot of podcasts, but I mean, you know, I would always be up for some recommendations, and you've mentioned some on this podcast that I keep meaning to listen to, but I have yet to find one besides this one that I really dig. So because I'm sort of old school, I still have an RSS reader, so I follow all the usual news sites, like The Rumpus and Literary Hub and Book Forum and Electric Literature, and you know, I subscribe to Shelf Awareness. I think they're great. You know, my favorite book sites used to be Book Ninja, which is an old school one, and Book Slut. And they're both gone, you know. That's something that we're trying to do with the Seattle Review of Books, is to have like this sort of chatty place that, you know, you go to for the news of the day, with a perspective and a voice, you know. I like places with a lot of voice, and I don't think there are enough of them, which is why I try to make, why I'm making my own.
Yeah. For the record, I think RSS readers are cool.
I think RSS feeds are underrated, because I like having everything come to me rather than scouting it out or trusting Facebook to bring it to me. Or I love Twitter, but it's not the same.
Yeah.
No.
If I weren't a writer who needed to promote his stuff, I probably wouldn't be on Facebook. Mm-hmm. But yeah.
I've spent a lot more time on Facebook lately because of our Drunk Booksellers page.
Oh yeah, by the way, Drunk Booksellers does have a presence on Facebook.
We don't really care, but
I don't think I've done that, so I will do that.
Wait, it's literally the same thing as you get if you sign up for our newsletter.
Which is even cooler.
Which is way cooler, and has our show notes, or Twitter, which has our snarky book talk, so, you know, pick your poison.
So now you know where Drunk Booksellers can be found on the internets. Paul, what about you?
Oh, that's a really great segue. On Twitter, I am at Paul Constant. I was an early adopter, so I got my own name. Although, for the most part on Twitter during the day, that is all political stuff. So, you know, depending on how you feel, if you're a Republican, you might not like that one. And then,
if you're a Republican, can you let us know? I'd be curious.
Yeah,
yeah. Can we
Republicans
have you on the
show? Listen to us?
and Seattle Review of Books is at Seattle Review of on Twitter. And then
no books.
Wasn't room for books. Yeah, just at Seattle Review of. And then the website is seattlereviewofbooks.com. And if anybody wants to email me with, you know, pitches or ideas for the website or anything like that, my email is paul@seattlereviewofbooks.com.
Cool. Paul, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me. It was so much fun.
So much fun. Everybody talked so much. I'm very proud.
Yeah.
I'm so glad I didn't smoke. I would have not talked at all. So I'm very proud of both of you for actually smoking.
Yeah, no, I think the experiment worked. It was good.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Cool. We already told you guys where to find us on the internets. Subscribe to our newsletter through links in the show notes, which will then give you the show notes via a newsletter.
It's also in our Twitter profile.
Yep, it's everywhere. At Drunk Bookseller on Twitter, everywhere else at Drunk Booksellers, drunkbookseller@gmail.com.
Yeah.
That's that. We did it.
Hey.
Read so hard, library's trying to find me. I am now marking my page. Don't want a crease on my page. Don't let me forget this page. Don't let me forget this page.
I am now marking my page. Don't want a crease on my page. Don't let me forget this page. Don't want to forget this page. I got bookmarks at home, but I forgot one for the road.
I have a bookmark that I can loan.
Know how many bookmarks I own? I am now marking my page. Don't let me forget this page. Don't let me forget this page. Don't let me forget this page.
Page.